So 2 weeks ago, we interviewed State Senator Sarah Trone Garriott on this program. Unfortunately, one of our affiliate stations had a glitch and was unable to air that important conversation. And that's especially important since the Iowa legislature is still in session as of May 12th, the day we're recording this program, which is kind of incredible. So what you're about to hear is a rerun of that conversation from 2 weeks ago. Since then, Sarah Trone Garriott has announced that she's running for Congress, and I will probably invite her and other Iowa 3rd District candidates on this program at some point, but in their capacity as candidates for Congress. So the rerun of this program, the one you're about to hear, is Sarah discussing her work as a state senator. And to be clear, an invitation to appear on this program was extended to all Iowa lawmakers at the beginning of the 2025 Iowa session. So thanks to Sarah and the half dozen or so other lawmakers who joined me. Here you go. I'm delighted to welcome to the program Sarah Trone Garriott. She's a state senator from Dallas County, mostly?
Yeah, I've got the fastest growing parts of Dallas County.
Okay, congratulations. That means your district's getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it's already oversized.
Oversized? Yeah. Well, welcome to the conversation. And again, you're a Democrat in a Republican world. But first, give us a little background on how you got involved in politics and what's your motivation?
All right. So the first time I went to the Iowa Capitol, my state senator had invited me to come pray for the Senate session. There's prayer every morning.
They need a lot of it, right?
Yes, definitely. But every day they would invite somebody to come in and share a prayer. And I have some feelings about prayer in state government, but you know, I think it's really important that if it's going to be there, it should be for all people. And so I went to share a prayer. I was serving a congregation in the district at that time, a prayer that would acknowledge that, you know, there's a lot of different religious perspectives, non-religious folks, just to be respectful of all of those things. And then I started paying more attention to what was happening in the building. And then eventually I ran against that state senator.
Well, how's that for payback?
It was a few years in between when I did that prayer.
And you won.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, it's a longer story than that, but I got more involved in advocacy, especially issues of reproductive rights, gun violence. I was very concerned about that, education funding. And so I started showing up at the state capitol, talking to my legislators. And even though they were very nice people, I felt like they were making decisions that really went in a different direction than what Iowans wanted. And eventually I realized that they weren't changing. You know, as much as we showed up, as much as we advocated, they weren't doing things any different. And so I decided it was time to run.
All right. And some of that perspective is colored by your background as a pastor.
Yeah. So I'm a Lutheran minister. I was serving in congregation, small town in West Virginia, really rural community in Virginia, suburban area in Clive, Iowa. And, you know, being in ministry is pretty political. Working with people, that's the challenge. There's a lot of different priorities and opinions. And faith is all about how we live together. And I think ideally that is what government is too. And so there were a lot of issues I was concerned about, wanted to be able to be a voice in that process. And I could see the importance that state government had in our day-to-day lives. And so I knew I could make a bigger difference if I ran.
And again, you're a Democrat in a Republican universe there at the State House. Each chamber has a supermajority Republican. All but one state office is held by a Republican. So nonetheless, you've got your priorities. And I'm just curious, what are your priorities as a state lawmaker?
So when I first was elected, it was a terrible year for Democrats, and we were going further into the minority. So I couldn't come in and just do what I wanted to, because I knew the score. I knew the way that the votes would stack up. But there's always an opportunity in every situation. And so for me, the priority was to make sure that the public had access to what was going on in the process. They understood the issues and they knew how they could use their voice. And so bringing the public's voice into that process has been my number one priority. The issues change. There are a lot of different issues for different people that really matter. But overall, making sure that the public is heard and protecting their access to that process is really important to me. But personally, public education, healthcare, mental health, child care, those are some things that I know a lot about and work very closely on. But I've also become the person who's the expert on the deer hunting bills. So you never know what's going to become important. Yeah.
So you're a big deer hunter?
No. No, not at all.
What, why? How and why did you become the deer hunting expert?
So in my first session, I was the ranking Democrat on natural resources.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes that gets treated like a throwaway committee, but it's incredibly important for issues of wildlife management, conservation. Public land. And so I got to know the issues and some of the people. Mm-hmm. And it's important that everyone has someone who's going to stand up for the things they care about. And so even though I'm not the ranking Democrat on natural resources anymore, I say put me on all the deer hunting bills because I care about these people. I listen to them and I make sure that their perspectives are heard in the process.
Yeah. Do you ever hear complaints about the out-of-state tags being too high?
Oh, yeah. That is a huge issue.
Yeah. In my background as a legislator, I had one involvement with hunting as well, and that was the turkey hunters were saying, you know, the bow hunters saying, we only get one tag. Deer, you know, gun people shooting turkeys with guns get two.
Mm.
Wait, well, where's our second tag? So the DNR didn't want to change that, but...
And actually right now the turkey population's decreasing.
So you got to balance it,
You can't just do things. You need to look at the circumstances.
So beyond deer hunting, are there things, how do you feel about the Republican-led agenda so far this year? I know you got a couple weeks left to go probably.
So there's a lot of things that I'm really concerned about. You know, there have been attacks on public education.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this continual effort to micromanage and dictate what can happen in public schools. But yet, even though private schools now are receiving state funding, there are no requirements, no expectations. Mm. So it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
There's this double standard. And it's really disrespectful of the people who are doing the work,
mm-hmm.
The families, the students, the administrators, the teachers. And so I see... just a common thread across a lot of Republican policies is this idea that they know better
mm-hmm.
than the people who actually do the things, than the folks who are directly impacted. And that really bothers me because we make better policy when we're talking with all of those stakeholders and understanding the issues. And we need to understand how it's going to impact different kinds of communities and different situations because we're making policy for the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really important to me that legislators listen to people from all across the state, not just the folks in their district.
Yeah, and I would say, as I look at with a broad sweep at the agenda coming out of the legislature, it's nothing that I'm excited about, and some parts of it I'm very, very disturbed about. But looking at the eminent domain bill that would mm-hmm. address the powerful issue of carbon dioxide pipelines, and that seems to have finally made its way to the Senate. Now, the House has passed versions of it for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
What's its fate in the Senate?
Okay, so there's a big but with this one.
Big
so
butt.
it came over from the House, but then it was amended in committee. So it has dramatically changed. So landowners who have been showing up at the Capitol advocating for their land rights are really concerned that mm-hmm. this amended bill is not going to meet their needs.
Kind of a poison pill.
It's not protecting their rights the way mm-hmm. that the original bill would. And then we've been told that it could be amended again.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be even something different. I don't know if it's going to come to the floor, but if it does in its current state, I don't think it's achieving the goal of what the landowners need. And so it's been interesting to watch. There's all these Republicans who they're kind of breaking ranks and they want some action. They want to vote on something because they do care about the issue deeply.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole party isn't in the same place. And so they keep making it so that nothing will actually get voted on.
Well, it seems like the rank and file voters absolutely want to see restrictions on the use of eminent domain to build pipelines. And again, the House has passed legislation, and then you have the Senate, and the guy in charge of the bill in the Senate, Busolo, is formerly a significant employee with Summit, the company pushing the pipeline.
Oh, yeah.
How is that not a conflict of interest?
I believe there might have been an ethics case about that.
But,
you know, for whatever reason, he continues to have sure. the opportunity to decide what will happen with this legislation. Mm. His priorities don't match mine. They don't match a lot of people in Iowa. Buslow was the architect of Medicaid privatization when he worked in the governor's office. So he's been behind a lot of things that have really taken money away from the taxpayers, given it to these private companies. And then taking away people's access and rights. So that's just kind of his MO.
And of course, Governor Reynolds is on the wrong side of the pipeline issue as well, even though she's been very quiet about it.
Oh, yeah.
But is that possibly one of the reasons why she may have decided to step aside? Does she see this as kind of an insurmountable challenge in a primary campaign?
I don't know if that's the thing. I do know that there's personal issues. Her husband has lung cancer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could be so many things. She endorsed DeSantis, and I don't think Trump has forgiven her for that. He's not a forgiving person.
Really? You don't think so?
And then there's also been, you know, the shifting ground because Jack Whitfer, who's the Senate Majority Leader, probably will not be the Senate Majority Leader for much longer.
Why is that?
He has brain cancer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so he is, everything's pointing to him retiring and being mm-hmm. done. And so there's a lot of people now wanting to be in leadership and kind of gunning for those positions. So everything's moving around. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's behind the governor's decision. She and I aren't close.
But my guess was actually health, although I think she knows that she's on the wrong side of the mm-hmm. eminent domain issue.
There's a lot of issues she's on the wrong side of.
Yeah, so fair enough.
But I don't know if it was really self-reflection that brought her to this moment.
So what about, there's a couple bills that I see the Republicans passing that I kind of like, and maybe you do too. The one that is House File 1032, it would create a grocery reinvestment and local food processing mm-hmm. grants, kind of trying to help some of the small towns that are struggling to keep their grocery stores?
Yeah, so I think this is a good program. It's small. It's a really small piece that could be beneficial. But the thing that would help small town and rural grocery stores the most would be not putting roadblocks in the way of people in Iowa getting SNAP benefits, the food assistance from the federal government, because that is about $50 million a month coming into the state of Iowa. It's spent equally in rural and urban communities, and that helps people buy groceries. And the summer EBT program for kids that helps them buy food, their families buy food when kids aren't in school, that is an additional $29 million that our state would be getting spent in local grocery stores. So those things would be really big for rural communities. This is a good program too, but it's going to be much smaller impact.
Yeah. And what about the bill on the courts, House File 472? It would basically resolve slap suits. Lawsuits intended to silence opposition. I mean, I've been on the receiving end of two of those.
Wow.
Both for Energy Transfer Partners.
Yeah.
They're meant to shut you up, and they used against media outlets as well as nonprofits. Yeah. And the bill that passed. Doug Burns, a fourth generation journalist from Carroll, says, quote, "This is a big day for Iowa. It's a big day for democracy, a big day for community newspapers. It's a big day for the truth." I mean, it seems like a good idea that they've done this. I was surprised, actually.
I am surprised, too. I was glad to vote for it. Powerful, wealthy people shouldn't be able to use our legal system to attack folks and silence them.
They're doing it. Yeah. So maybe this will help.
I hope so.
So what's your overall assessment of the Iowa Democratic Party?
Oh, boy.
You know I was going to get to this, right?
You know, so I'm kind of an outsider. I wasn't really engaged with the party before I ran. And my district is pretty purple. And what I've found as a person running for office is there's the Iowa Democratic Party, which is one thing, and then there's the caucuses for the Senate and the House, which are others, and then there's the campaigns. And they really sometimes function separately. Will Rogers said, "I'm not part of an organized political party, I'm a Democrat,"
right.
And I really find that to be true in Iowa.
Do you find that just being a Democrat is a liability? I mean, look at Andy McKean, mm-hmm. former Republican, state legislator, both Senate and House, who switched parties to Democrat And then he found himself suddenly without support. I mean, in districts he won handily as a Republican.
Yeah, you know, so there are folks for whom the D word is just, it turns them off. They shut the door. They don't want to talk. But in my district, a lot of people tell me that they don't vote for the party. They vote for the person.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that to be true for a lot of folks. We need to get away from the labels piece, mm-hmm. because just because somebody's part of your party doesn't mean they're good or doing a good job,
mm-hmm.
or a bad person. You know, it's really should be based on that individual and how hard they work and if they care and show up for you.
So what should the state party be doing differently?
I think talking to people who win tough districts would be a good place to start.
So talking to you.
I would love to visit.
And they haven't done that?
I've had some conversations, but... you know, it's kind of amazing to me all the think pieces that would come out, people pronouncing what the Democrats should do, and none of those people helped me with my campaign or talked to me about how I won.
Are you bitter?
No. Okay, I just I know I have a lot to offer, and you know, if they ever want to visit with me about it, I'm glad to share.
I'll share this again. I shared this last week. I got a response from a rural Republican voter. He said, quote, Ed, I'm a Republican and Trump voter, and man enough to say... I wish I didn't. You're touching on some issues like fascism that have some merit. Democrats should be happy about what is going to happen in politics because of the idiot Trump screwing things up. The Republican Party will be shunned and our candidates rolled in the next election. Voters will finally get enough of this unprofessional loose cannon who is a business disaster for America. Is that a rare rural Republican voter talking, or do you think there's more like that out there that... see what's happening in Washington in particular, and that it might have an effect down the ticket here in Iowa.
I think there is an opportunity here. I'm not happy about what's going on because a lot of people are suffering and hurting, and we knew that a lot of vulnerable folks would really experience some terrible things under this administration. But people want someone who's going to show up for them and be different. And there's a lot of frustration with Democrats and Republicans. You know, a lot of folks angry at all political parties,
mm-hmm.
and politicians and politics as usual. And we need people to seek a different way to be in leadership,
mm-hmm.
so that they can authentically really serve the people who are electing them.
And how serious do you think the threat of fascism is under Trump? I mean, that's something that... that some of us have been really hammering on and really seeing parallels between, you know, some of Trump's actions and words and other authoritarian rulers throughout history.
If the chief executive in our country is going to ignore the rule of law, that is incredibly dangerous.
And he's doing that.
Yes. And so...
is he going to get away with it?
Well, we need people who will stand up to him. And we need our elected leaders who are in D.C. to stand up, because we have separation of powers for a reason.
Right.
They're not taking that responsibility and using it for the good of the people.
And we have mostly a compliant U.S. Congress. Give credit where credit is due, Senator Grassley has at least made some noise about the importance of, for example, having Congress involved in the discussion about tariffs.
Yeah. It's quite quite a kind of weak words, but, you know.
It's better than what you're hearing from majority of Republican senators.
Yeah, that's a low bar.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough, yeah. So you've been elected 3 times now?
Yeah, I've had 3 back-to-back competitive races.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
And they've all been pretty close.
Yeah, relatively. When I took on the state Senate president, Jake Chapman, and beat him, it was a much healthier margin. I mean, for a state Senate race, it was almost 900 votes, so that was pretty big.
And that was against the president of the Senate.
President of the Senate.
How close were the other 2 races?
My first race was 167 votes, and my most recent one was 29. So please know that your vote does matter, especially in legislative races at the state level. They come down to such close. Out of 40,000 votes, it really came down to 29.
Any thoughts about higher office?
Announcements will be forthcoming.
Well, that's about as coy a response as I can get.
Yeah. You know, for me... public service is a calling, and so I'm always keeping my ears open to how I'm called in this moment. Honestly, I never wanted to do any of this. I didn't want to be a pastor. I didn't want to be in the state Senate, but I saw an opportunity to serve, and I realized that I had some gifts to bring to that service, and so I'm open.
So if you weren't a pastor or in politics, what would you be doing?
I don't know. You know, I'd find something, because I like a lot of things. You know, when I was a kid, I really wanted to be a fashion designer. and then an artist. And my family told me, oh, you can't make any money doing those things. So I was like, ha ha, I'll become a minister. I'll never make any money.
You showed them.
I did. But I've had an incredibly interesting life. There is so much good work to be done in the world.
Yeah. And now is a good time to be doing it. There's lots of challenges. And anyway. Hey, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. Sarah Trone-Garriott, folks, a state senator from Dallas County here in Iowa.